Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hi, I'm Rick Martinez. I am a cookbook author and lover of all things sweet and spicy. And I am currently living in beautiful, sunny Mazatlan, Mexico.
And I'm Carla Lali Music. I'm also a cookbook author, professionally trained chef, and video host based in beautiful Brooklyn, New York.
And we've been solving and laughing our way through food problems together for more than a decade in test kitchens, videos, and magazines.
Has it truly been more than a decade?
I don't know why I said that. It's like, I can't even deal.
You look like $1 million.
Oh my God, you look fabulous. That skin, the hair.
Ever since we've known each other, we've worked together to improve each other's recipes, solve cooking conundrums, and come up with delicious new ideas.
And now we're doing it here on Borderline Salty, the show where we take your calls, boost your confidence, and make you a better, smarter, happier cook.
I'm happier since I knew you.
Oh, I'm so much happier since I knew you. Today, we're getting into the Allium question, dissecting authenticity and weighing in on custard toast.
But before we get into all that, we're going to kick the show off today the way we will kick the show off every week, and that is with something good. So Rick, tell me something good.
Well, you know what's actually beyond good, Carla?
Tell me.
This podcast. It's finally here. We have been working on this podcast for, well, you've been working on it for years. I came on about a year ago, and it has been one of the joys in my life. Like, no matter what is happening out there in the universe, I know that I am going to laugh my face off and try really hard to make you laugh.
That's what I was going to say. I think, like, the thing that blows me away about making this podcast with you is like how joyful it is, how fun it is. The fact that you moved to Mexico and I see you now more than like ever is also amazing. And it's like our time to be together, just amazing. So it is, as you said, it is better than good. It's great.
And I am happy to be called Mama and Food Daddy, so.
So true. I know people are like, my internet mom and dad are making a podcast.
I know. Who knew that we would become America's Mom and Food Dad? But you know, like, actually, so a smaller thing that happened yesterday is I cooked for a group of friends, and, you know, they're from here in Mazatlan. Actually, a couple of them were from Guadalajara. But I cooked something, and one of the things that I love doing is surprising Mexicans who have grown up here, have grown up with the cuisine, and when I can actually present something that is not only new, but something that just, you see that look, and I know you know this look, it's that look when someone takes a bite of food, and it's just utter and pure joy that just like goes across their face. And you know that they love what they're eating. They can't even verbalize it because they just are shoveling more food into their mouths. Mm-hmm. And I know that that is a successful dish at that moment. And it's just so gratifying. And it made me so happy.
That is truly the ultimate validation.
Exactly. I mean, that's why I cook. I just literally for that reaction. But what is good with you?
Well, my something good is extremely recent, like happened in the last 20 minutes, in fact. This morning, I was working on something else and kind of took longer than I should have. And I need to roast a couple chickens because we're going away with friends later today. And I want to bring dinner so that when we get where we're going, we don't have to start cooking. And I managed to spatchcock, flatten, season 2 chickens, not one, but 2, and get them in the oven in 14 minutes.
Stop it. Wait.
I'm really proud of myself.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Wow.
Got it done before noon. It was still AM.
That is insane. Oh my God.
The delicious aromas of roast chicken are wafting through the air. So I feel very accomplished. I could just lie back down for the rest of the day and feel like my to-do list was done.
That pales in comparison to the wafting smell of my yogurt right next to me. So thanks for that. It's time to answer some of our caller questions.
Hi, Rick and Carla. This is Deandria, and I have a question for you about pancakes. I love pancakes. I typically make them every Saturday, and I'm wondering, do you have any tips on how to flip pancakes properly so that you don't have that spillage, that you sort of maintain your perfect circle? Am I flipping too soon? Can't wait to hear your response. Thanks.
So this is the perfect question for you. You and Cosmo are like the pancake dynamic duo.
I think I've been making pancakes every weekend for my younger child, Cosmo, for going on 9 years now.
Oh my God.
I make a lot of pancakes on a lot of Saturdays. And so there's a recipe in Where Cooking Begins called Cosmo's Power Pancakes, which was developed with him, for him. And essentially it's just because he was like a total pancake monster and he has such a sweet tooth. So it was like, is it about the pancake? Is it about the maple syrup? You know, hard to tell. But instead of not giving the kid pancakes, because like I just come from a place where like loving food is good, right? We want to like keep that going for as long as possible and have this healthy relationship with food being an important and wonderful source of pleasure and sustenance in your life. But I was like, how can I push it a little bit so that there's a little bit more protein, maybe a little bit more fiber, maybe things that are keeping keep him fuller longer. So I just started adding like seeds and some whole wheat flour, and it's got chia seeds and flax meal hemp hearts, you know, sunflower, oats, whatever added to it. Delicious. We all still eat them.
So now when you were making them, were they perfect circles or do you even worry about such things?
No, they're definitely not perfect circles. And for me, it was figuring out the texture of the batter than it was like what shape it was once it got onto the griddle. But one trick for a round pancake, though, that I have learned is like instead of trying to pour it into a circle, like if you just pour the batter straight down, where it hits, it will like spread out into a circle on its own because something with physics.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Unclear.
So I used to work at ABC Kitchen, a brunch, for whatever god-awful reason other than the chef hated me. But I remember, you know, on sauté, one of the, besides the eggs cooked to temperature, that's another episode. I also had the fortune of being able to make everyone on Saturday and Sunday in downtown New York pancakes. And the trick that I learned is you pour the pancake batter out, and then with the bottom of the rounded part of the ladle, you just sort of lightly tap and then swirl, but just to kind of push the batter out from the center, because it's going to want to pile up in the center. So if you push it out, then it'll like sort of spread gently into a perfect circle. Because as we all know, during brunch, people want perfectly circular pancakes.
So one thing I've also learned from making pancakes for Cosmo and then, you know, eventually this child wants to flip the pancake. Like, that's like half of, you know, I want to flip the pancake. And you're like, no, kid, you're not old enough. You can't do it. To be like, yes, climb up on the stepladder and like, let's do this. And from watching and teaching both of these children about flipping pancakes, the first instinct I think we have as humans is, and not in general, but like with flipping pancakes, I think our first instinct is, it's like, I need to get to the nipple. That's really the first instinct. But later, the first instinct.
After that.
Shortly after that, you're like, I need to flip a pancake pretty soon. And the first time someone flips a pancake, they want to flip it like left or right, like they're flipping the page of a book, right? Mm-hmm. And what happens when you do that is in the kind of like tilting to go to the left, that's when things can get kind of messy. So when you're flipping a pancake, I've learned to like pick it up and then turn it over as you put it back down exactly where it was. So instead of, you know, going from like east to west with it, just go like up and over.
I think people get really scared of that. And I always think of Julia Child. And, you know, and she talked about, there was an episode where she was making, I think it was either an omelet or a frittata or something like that. And she talked about having the courage of your convictions and when you're flipping. And you just have to like, you have to commit to it and then just do it.
100%.
And if it doesn't work out, her famous response is she like flips it and potato and egg go everywhere. She just picks it up off the counter, sticks it back in the pan and arranges it. And she's like, and if it doesn't work out, who's to know?
Yeah. You know who doesn't care if the pancake's round or not? Like anyone that you're bringing a pancake to, they're just psyched.
Right. Yeah, unless they're a paying customer, then
fuck them. Unless they're a customer at ABC. Next caller, please.
Hi, my name's Brittany. I guess my question was, what do you guys do with like the very last wilty bit of something, almost overripe avocado, or just like a little bit of like wilty parsley in your fridge? You know, like next-overs are great, but what about just those little last bits that you can't find anything to do with?
This is a great question, and it's something that I do almost every week because if I'm shooting, usually every shoot is like a dish that is completely unrelated to the other one and completely different. And so at the end of the week, I have a refrigerator full of all the remnants of all those things that don't go together. And what I normally do is just literally throw everything, those couple of last random stalks of celery, that odd carrot, the half of a chili poblano, and just throw it in a pot of water and make soup. And it's very, very comforting. It's minimal effort. All I have to do is chop whatever's in there. And you can use whatever herbs you have left over. Any wilting greens will just like blend into the soup. And I don't have to think about it. All I do is put it in water, add salt, and let it cook.
Oh, there's nothing more satisfying than like finishing those little bits up.
Yeah.
Ugh, love that. Yeah, I do something similar. Like if I don't have actual things that are worth even putting back in the fridge, I'll keep a kind of bag in the freezer with little aromatics like leek tops or my mushroom scraps or chicken bones and just kind of keep those building up in a freezer bag. And then eventually I'll make a big pot of stock, which then like you pay it forward and could make soup from it or cook grains in it. Another thing, I mean, it kind of depends what the leftovers are. And Brittany did refer to next overs, which like we've all been there. But a lot of times I do this on Monday night if we've had a big weekend of cooking and there's leftover things that are good, but there's not quite enough to go around the whole table for our family of four. Mm-hmm. I will declare that it is picnic dinner. And that just means that like the last butt of the steak that didn't get finished, the one chicken thigh that's left over, all of those things like end up on a big board in the middle of the table, bread and butter. I'll try to make a big salad. And then if you put like mustard and mayonnaise out with it, sometimes you can make it into a sandwich. Like I'll make a salad sandwich and just stick whatever in there. So that's another good way if you live with other people to just call it something else. You know, it's all marketing. Borderline Salty, please hold.
Line two, you're on.
Hi, this is John Darby. My conundrum is when a recipe calls for one shallot, what does that mean? Does that mean one lobe of this shallot? Does it mean both lobes? Is it two tablespoons? Is it four? No one ever says. That's the conundrum.
Truly the existential question of our times.
I mean, I relate so much to this question because I remember like when I first started working in food and testing recipes, that would just bug the shit out of me. Sometimes they're like the size of my fist. Sometimes they're like two lobes. Sometimes it's just one.
Yeah.
Sometimes like the lobes are like splitting apart, like a splitting atom. Like, what the hell?
What I really hate in a recipe is when it calls for like he said, two tablespoons of a chopped shallot. That is so rude. First of all, you have to be chopping the shallot and then measure it and be like, oh no, I guess I have to chop a little more. Like, that's irresponsible recipe writing. I don't subscribe.
And then what the hell am I supposed to do with that like quarter bit of like partially chopped shallot? That's dumb.
I think this is like PSA, anything under the skin of that shallot is one shallot. So if you open up the shallot and there's two lobes that are kind of like squinged in there together.
Right.
It's still a shallot.
Right. I agree.
It's just a shallot that happened to have two lobes.
And I also think that you should, you know, as you're cooking this, you should just think about, okay, what is it that you are actually making? So for example, if you were making a salad dressing and you have an unusually large shallot with two giant lobes and the recipe calls for one shallot, like,
right.
You know, like, do you really want that giant shallot in your salad dressing?
Right.
Like, is that...
You're not going to follow blindly.
Yeah. So I think, you know, yeah. I mean, you could actually then just use maybe a quarter of the shallot and then freeze the rest, mm-hmm. and put it in your little stock bags. And then, you know, you can make stock with that at right. a later date. But yeah, like, so just... Because it is actually... It's not only annoying when you have a recipe that doesn't call for a specific size, but it is also annoying when you go to the grocery store 1 week and you have gigantic shallots, and then the next week you go and they're like the size of a garlic clove.
Yeah. Size matters.
Preach. Carla, the moment has come. We have a live caller.
Yay.
Hi, Gianna.
Hi.
This is exciting.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
We're so excited to chat with you, Gianna.
Yeah, so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. I've been watching you guys for like 4 years, like when I just started getting into cooking. So especially like Rick with like the Mexican cooking.
And thank you.
So my question is, what scares me about cooking is like, I want to figure out how to cook authentic Mexican food correctly.
Yeah.
Especially like when it like applies to people who don't have access to the authentic ingredients that Mexican food can sometimes require.
I think that's a great question. And I wanted to talk about this because it's something that I struggled with also. And what I found being here and traveling around Mexico is... There are literally, like, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of ways to make every single dish, every single salsa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I live in Mazatlan. If I walk around my block and I ask people, I need you to make carnitas. And so five people come over to my house and make carnitas. Every single carnita will be completely different. And to me, that's the beauty of cooking, is that people add their own sazon, their own creativity and flair and passion to a dish. So, you know, there are certain things that are normally present and certain things like Mexican chiles, which definitely add the signature flavor. But that belief that there is a correct way to make Mexican food, or honestly, I think it also applies to other cultures as well. I think that is an American construct. It's something that a lot of times Mexican Americans feel like we have to do it this one way because that's the way, that's the only way it can be done. And it's just not, it's not true.
Yeah, I feel like that just arises because like my mom was an immigrant and like I grew up here and I grew up very much American and like the cooking kind of skipped a generation because my abuelita did all the cooking. We call her Ita. for short. because, and so my mom didn't want to be forced into those same gender roles that my Ita was. So she never cooked. And I got into it for fun because I wanted to. Like, I feel like it's a good life skill. But I just feel so much pressure to carry on the Mexican culture for my whole family because none of them cook except for me.
Right, right. I'm curious, like, what kind of dishes did she make that you loved? And what do you want to be making?
Well, she has her own version of mole, which is just so delicious. That's definitely one that scares me a lot. And also albóndigas. And I can say this as a blanket statement. She makes the best albóndigas in the world. And she has, like, a recipe book. And it's getting passed down to me when she passes. So, like, I'm just, like, trying to get the skills, you know?
I would highly recommend recording her. Certainly voice, but if you can get her to do video as well.
Well, that's the best.
And I don't want to be, I don't want to like turn this conversation down, but my, my mother loved Thanksgiving and I was in culinary school at the time and, I wasn't going to be able to go home for Thanksgiving that year. And then I was like, this is dumb. I'm not going to stay in New York by myself for Thanksgiving. And so I called my mom and I was like, okay, I got a flight. I'm going to go home. I'm not going to be home until Friday after Thanksgiving. Can we move Thanksgiving? She's like, totally fine. I get home and I was like, all right, I'm going to record you making Thanksgiving. And she was like, no. And she hated it. And she was so mad at me. And I was like, I'm sorry. I'm not asking you. I'm just going to do it. And so I recorded her, you know, making every single dish. I wrote everything that she did down. How do you do this? What did your mom do? All of those things. That was her last Thanksgiving.
That is an amazing story. That is, I'm so glad you got to do that.
If I hadn't done that, like all of those recipes would have been gone.
Mm.
Yeah.
So my first piece of advice is make the albóndigas together with your abuelita. Record it. And at the very least, take really great notes. And I'm gonna send you a recipe for a mole sencillo, a simple mole. So it's a 10-ingredient mole. And to me, the point of that recipe is really to learn the technique, which are gonna produce those flavors that you would find in Mexico. The ingredients are really secondary, and I think you should choose them based on what you have available, what you can afford, and what you actually just like eating.
Yeah, I think there's nothing less valid or delicious or welcomed about, you know, doing it your way. You have the most important part of this, which is like you have a love and a desire to cook that is inspired by eating all of this amazing, delicious food. And there's nothing like more pure and perfect than that. You know, you can't really go wrong. Like when your desire starts from that place and when you have an amazing model and an inspiration.
Carla, that is so incredibly important. And I have to remind myself of that all the time. I think it's really important to take the pressure off of yourself. And I think a lot of times, you know, for me personally, I struggle with this, right? Like, am I being too assimilated? Am I being respectful to my culture and my heritage? And when you start thinking about your food in terms of those lines, it's very rigid. It's very hard. And for me, it takes the joy out of the food. It takes the joy out of the cooking.
I will definitely cook that recipe as soon as I can. Thank you so much. And thank you, Rick, for like opening up about your story.
So nice to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And come to Mexico.
I want to so bad. I will one of these days.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
The time has come, but before we go, it's time for one of our borderline salty game shows, Rad Fad or Bad Fad.
This is a game where Carla shows me one of her crazy new internet things, and I decide whether, well, honestly, whether I like it or not, whether it's rad or bad.
Okay, are you ready?
Obvs.
We're going to watch the viral custard toast method.
Oh, I love custard toast.
Oh, okay, well, spoiler alert. If you were expecting to see Taiwanese custard toast, you may be a little disappointed.
Today, I tried the viral custard toast. You're going to need bread, Greek yogurt, eggs, fruit, and maple syrup. Add together all the ingredients on the screen, optional lemon zest and juice, and give it a whisk. Flatten your bread and pour it on in. Top with your favorite fruit. I did a lemon blueberry toast. Air fry at 350 for 12 minutes. Hope you enjoy.
All right, so let's rewind for a second. This video goes very fast, but let me just rewind quickly and let you know what the viewer is seeing. She just combined the egg, the yogurt, lemon zest, and maple syrup, mixes that up in a little bowl, then presses down her bread, which is not the typical thick toast you would expect to see, adds the mixture, puts some berries on top, puts everything into the air fryer, and then takes it out and it's beautifully golden brown.
Okay, I'm going to start by saying I love custard toast. What this person made, I mean, I guess technically is a custard, but it's the layering thing, honestly, that bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
To me, what I love about custard toast is that the custard and the bread are fused together. It is like the most perfect French toast. like, you soak the bread and the custard is inside.
Right.
It can barely hold its shape because it's filled with that custard. And then I also have a problem with, like, the squishing the bread down.
To make a little divot.
Right. And to me, like, the beauty of custard toast is the toast shouldn't be a vehicle for the custard. They should be together, fused.
Gotcha.
So you're just creating this, like, flat layer of squished bread and then this yogurt egg thing on top. That seems very unpleasant. Where I've had it, like Winsun Bakery has like an amazing custard toast. You brulee sugar over the top, so you get like almost like a creme brulee vibe going, and it's just, oh.
All right, so has the jury finalized their deliberations in this case?
Yes, we have. Your Honor, we find custard toast rad. We find custard toast as depicted by TikTok bad.
If you are loving this trend, we love you back. But if you want to make a more classic version of Taiwanese custard toast, there's a link to a great video by Angel Wong's Kitchen in the show notes.
That's it for this week's episode of Borderline Salty. But don't you worry, we'll be back next week.
In the meantime, you can find recipes and recommendations from this week's episode in our show notes. Check it out.
If you have a question or a fear you want us to help you through, you can always leave us a voicemail at 833-433-FOOD.
That's 833-433-3663.
Borderline Salty is an original production by Pineapple Street Studios. I'm Rick Martinez.
And I'm Carla Lally Music. You can find links to our work in the show notes for this episode.
Natalie Brennan is our lead producer.
Janelle Anderson is our producer.
Our managing producer is Agarenish Ashagre.
Our assistant producer is Mari Orozco.
Our head of sound and engineering is Raj Makija.
Mixing and engineering by Davey Sumner and Jason Richards.
Our assistant engineers are Sharon Bardalis and Jade Brooks.
Original music from our very own Raj Makija.
Additional music from Vincent Vega, Spring Gang, and Glovebox, courtesy of Epidemic Sound.
Legal services for Pineapple Street are provided by Bianca Grimshaw at Granderson Desrochers.
Our executive producers are Max Linsky and Jenna Weiss-Berman. Special thanks to Justine Daum and Kat Aaron.
We appreciate Biandria, Brittany, John, and Gianna for calling in this week. And thanks to you for listening. Talk to you next week.